The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects. That's at Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
We also have joining us tonight at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Excelsior!
And hopefully joining us later tonight, if some storms cooperate, will be at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Let's hope for storm cooperation.
You shouldn't have pissed her off.
Ah!
Make sure to check out his website, popculturenetwork.com. And while you're checking out websites, you can go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account for Comic Book Chronicles, at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Add us to your circles on Google+, search for The Click Nation, and add the Click Nation Google+ page. Subscribe to us on youtube.com/TheClickNation. And we're also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Make sure to go on both of those and give us the thumbs up, give us 5-star reviews, help us climb up the podcast rankings. We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast and comic-related podcasting networks. Go to both websites, coldslitherpodcast.com and comicrelated.com. And on the Cold Slither Podcast website, you should see a nice link to the Cold Slither Podcast Network's Redbubble page, where you can find and purchase Comic Book Chronicles related swag.
Nice. That's right.
Go give us some money.
Ah!
Make sure to use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles or CBCron on your favorite social media websites. We are monitoring both. So it's up to you which one you want to use.
Either or both, that's fine.
And remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So last week we had to move our recording from Thursday to Friday to accommodate me going to see Avengers Age of Ultron. But luckily, since it's a week out, we've all seen it.
Yes!
So we can talk about it.
We can talk about it. And I just wanted to add at the top of the show, Tim and I did Comic Book Chronicles Treasury Edition that I was happy to see was downloaded a lot. In our weekly report. That's pretty good. And we had a little extra content last week on top of putting our the regular Comic Book Chronicles a little bit later because Tim needed to see Age of Ultron on Thursday night. So we can talk about this now.
Yeah, it's awesome. Might as well just go ahead and get into it now, right?
I was about to say, we'll lead off with this.
Hit the spoiler bell.
Oh, okay, you're right. We are talking Age of Ultron. Spoilers to follow.
So, how many times have we seen it?
Just once. So far. Once so far. But I do have appointments with other friends who weren't able to catch it at the same time. So I definitely will be seeing it at least one, if not two more times.
I saw it the Thursday night, and then I went back for a Saturday matinee in 3D.
Wow.
Nice.
So it was.
Better in 3D?
Yes, better in 3D, and it's not even so much, you know, special effects 3D. It just looked a lot crisper.
Right.
Okay. I watched it only in 3D, so I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it to. The only thing I would probably do is maybe catch it in IMAX.
Hmm.
And I actually enjoyed it more the second time because I could sort of concentrate and, you know, not just be overwhelmed by so much happening on my screen.
Sure.
Focus on things.
Yeah, I can see that.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. So did either of you folks know, I guess you knew that Whedon really had to cut out a lot of the movie. Did you happen to notice that, you know, maybe the story was a little disjointed at times?
Yes, and I think I brought up during the week also, and I heard those parts are gonna be cut back into the Blu-ray, so I'm kind of interested to see, you know, what they were and how they fit in, because there were a couple of parts that seemed like, hey, they seemed like there could have been a little bit more here.
I agree. You know. I agree. I'm looking forward to the Blu-ray release of this movie specifically, just to see what it is that Whedon cut out, because you know, there were definitely a couple of, you know, transitions that just seemed a little, not rushed, but, you know, it just didn't seem like they were telling what needed to be. They were telling the bare bones of what needed to be told.
Right. And actually, now that I think about it, there was, if one of the scenes that I'm thinking about is one of the scenes that would have made more sense. I remember a few months ago, there was a scene in the cave with, and supposedly had something to do with maybe a little bit more on Black Panther.
Right.
Woman.
Yeah, I was about to say, but now I think that's been debunked. Right.
Right.
Yeah,
they did. So I don't know if that was going to be one that's going to get added back in, or if that has any significance. No.
I mean, that whole dream sequence, I thought, was just very, jarring. Mm-hmm. I had trouble following that. I don't know about you guys. It might have been Thor's a byproduct of me watching this, like, after midnight, but still, you know? Wait,
Thor's or any one of them?
Thor's, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Thor's was the one that was sort of ham-fisted in there.
Yeah.
To set up future movies.
Yeah, I guess that's going to be, that's something I'm reckoning, Rock, I guess.
The things I remember taking out after I watched it on Thursday night was, it might have came to me after I got home, was there was a couple of scenes in the trailers that didn't make it into the movie. It's like you can see, like maybe there's a couple where they showed something in the trailer, but in the movie they showed it from like a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was never that scene where they're in the Citadel Church or whatever, and all the Ultron robots are coming. They never show Black Widow with her power sticks.
Well, they did show her.
They showed her using them, but not popping them out.
Right.
Now that I think of it, there's another one I just remember from the very first trailer. There's like Cap walking on the street in slow motion. That wasn't in there. Mm-hmm. There was the woman in the lake or the pond with Thor, like Roddy just mentioned earlier. Right. That wasn't in there. Just a little stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but outside of that, are you guys thinking what's your stance on this one between this one and the first movie?
I like the first one better.
Yeah.
But it's hard to describe, it's hard to compare, because the first one was genuine wish fulfillment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, literally, that was something that none of us, I know Tim is on the younger side, but Roddy and even people, fans older than us, never thought they would see the day that would be on screen. And true. To see that on screen, I think probably glossed over maybe some of the smaller weaknesses of the movie. But because it's been on cable so much and I've been rewatching it, you know, without even trying to put in the Blu-ray,
right.
I haven't really seen or detected any weaknesses in the movie that pop out upon repeated rewatching.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that is what you pick up once you've watched it, like, you know, let's say 10 times or more. And I really haven't picked that up. This movie, you know, I just kind of worked my way through, even though I didn't notice. I give Whedon credit. I did not notice the time passing, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of worked my way through this movie a lot more than I did the first movie.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can describe it. Like, I was like, kind of working my way through the scenes as opposed to just sitting back and enjoying it.
Yeah.
A lot of that can come with trying to watch every single clip that's released online for the movie before we actually get to see it.
Hmm.
So it's like we just feel like we've seen everything before we've gotten to theater. So it's, when you're seeing it happen in real time, you go back to the clips you watched and you're trying to sort of watch it in your mind, trying to guess what the next scene's going to be or how it's going to play out.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I consciously stayed away towards the, you know, I stayed away from the last trailers that they put out, so I avoided some of that. But I just felt like, you know, again, getting back to what was cut out of the movie, maybe that would have helped with some of the pacing, or with help with, you know, maybe explaining some of the scenes better.
Right.
So.
And going back to what Tim said earlier about the stuff cut out of the trailer, that's probably actually a good thing. I mean, unless that ends up being a little bit better, looks a little bit better to you than what was in the movie. But the fact that they would do a trailer and kind of do an alternate cut or do something that was different, that's actually pretty good, because that way they're not giving away, right, you know, stuff that's actually in the movie, you know. And I know they've done that before in cases that probably theater did not work out for them, right, in movie theaters. But in this case, it probably worked. But like Agent 70, I didn't watch all of them. I think I probably did watch the last trailer before, because just like, yeah, I didn't want to see all of them, just ones here and there.
So what? Ones. So let's start picking at it a little bit. What did not work for you in this movie?
The Thor scene, the Thor visions.
Really?
Yeah.
That, so did it seem like Did it seem like it just didn't need to?
I didn't understand them the first time I watched the movie.
Hmm.
And then he just, like, goes off on his little thing. And it mostly doesn't – also, it doesn't work because apparently of all the stuff they cut out from that, those scenes where him and Dr. Selvig,
mm-hmm,
yeah, go find some mystery pond.
Right.
And he goes on a vision quest.
Yeah.
That was weird.
It's not explained clearly enough.
Well, this is the way I took that one, because that was at the time where, hey, the team was kind of split because they, you know, they had gotten compromised by Scarlet Witch, whom they never named this, but that's right, that's fine. We all know who she was.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured at first, well, that's what he needed to kind of get his head straight, but once he got into the vision, It did kind of seem a little disjointed. It's like, okay.
Like, what was...
It was like, well, he's got a movie coming out, so maybe they're just using that to kind of, hey, tack that on here.
What was Heimdall trying to tell him?
That was definitely foreshadowing to Ragnarok.
Exactly.
That's definitely foreshadowing. That, you know, they're absolutely teasing what's going to happen in the next Thor movie. I think that's what that was.
Yeah, and that's what tipped that off. Yeah. So...
It's like, it's all your fault. What's my fault, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a couple of things that I was really, you know, disappointed in. You know, one of the things that I wasn't a fan of was the Black Widow, Bruce Banner thing.
I
thought that played off to be more awkward to me than anything.
Yeah.
You know, that there's been a lot of screen space and ink, or at least typing wasted on this. But you know, my take on it was it just felt awkward. It didn't feel right to me. I don't know why that is. That maybe this is just a personal thing for me, but it just didn't feel right. I can't really quantify it any better than that.
Right.
What else did not work for me? You know, kind of like what you guys were talking about before about the Thor dream sequence and how it was just really hard to decipher what was going on. I didn't like that they whacked spoiler bell. I mean, we rang it before, but we're really diving deep into it now about how they waxed Pietro right away.
Oh, yeah, at the end of the movie. Yeah.
I know now, Whedon allegedly shot an alternate ending.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see that in the Blu-ray, and maybe, you know, this is the Marvel Universe after all. People do come back.
And I was about to say that. That could very well happen to where it's like, oh, well, they could have Coulsoned them or something.
You know? Exactly, exactly. Or they didn't even have to go that far.
Right, exactly. It was like, hey, his metabolism so fast that, yeah, he was kind of in bad shape then, but he got better.
Right, and he was healing when they assembled the new team of Avengers or something.
Exactly.
You know? So. And freaking Whedon, apparently he's not a big fan of the battle cry, and he cut us off right, you know, did that on purpose at the end of the movie, and I thought Cap was going to say it, and then they cut it, and I was like, you bastard!
The audible groans that was going through the theater I went into when it did that, it was like, oh man, that's messed up. Oh
man.
It was like, all right, well played, Whedon, well played, but that was messed up.
I should remind people that if you go to declicknation.com, you can find my full review of Avengers Age of Ultron.
There you go.
I'm about to open it now and see what things I typed down that I said I did not like.
Yeah, and then we'll get to what we did like.
Right.
So, Roddy, what about you? What did you not like?
So there wasn't much that I did not like so much as stuff that was kind of jarring, let's say. Ultron, you can't really expect him to be like too terribly robotic because, I mean, not that he was like that in the comics, but he was I'm not going to say overly.
Too jokey?
He was a little jokey for.
Yeah, I felt that too.
Yeah, that's something I
felt that
point
too.
That was. But then weird. I see why they did it because he's, you know, part of one half of his creator is Tony Stark, so he had some of Tony's personality
mannerism. Yeah, and once you got past that, it was like, okay, I could deal with it. But anytime he kind of just started off serious and then jumped into a joke like that,
yeah, like seriously, you threw up in your mouth, really?
Yeah, I'm like, that was
something else. Something else I wasn't too crazy about concerning Ultron was, you know, I did enjoy him as a villain because I thought, you know, he's up there with Loki as far as memorable villains in these movies, but I guess in my mind I always thought that the terror of Ultron would be more global. Like, yes, he tried to recreate the dinosaurs becoming extinct by throwing an asteroid at the planet Earth, but like I expect to see more of like Ultron taking control of machines across the planet to like terrorizing people. There wasn't really too much of that. Actually, there wasn't any of it besides him attacking whatever the country was called.
Sokovia.
Sokovia.
Sokovia. I mean, no, Sokovia.
I know.
Which, that's funny. The weird thing is, speaking on that, though, I think when they referenced that in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode.
Oh, yeah, more spoiler alerts. Yeah, we're talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too, people.
Right. Like, at the end of, which I thought was kind of neat, but, you know, seemed tacked on, I guess. I don't know. But it seemed like they had an alternate mispronunciation of that country. Now, this is a minor thing that I seem like I've noticed, but it seemed like they were pronouncing it a little different than what was in the movie. Like I think they pronounced it with a G instead of a K or something like that. I don't know. That was a little thing, but it was something
that
seemed
like that.
Yeah,
that's somebody's accent, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
What I was going to say is, a couple of the little things that did tie into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like, oh, so that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, we finally find out what Theta Protocol was.
Wait, did we?
It was the helicarrier.
It was the rebuilding.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
It was the rebuilt flagship helicarrier from the first movie.
Right. Oh, and that was a nice little Easter egg in there also, which I didn't pick up on until later on.
What was that?
Do you remember the dude that was the dude
playing
that
Gallagher?
Was at the launch station?
No, he was a soldier.
Huh? Yeah, the dude from Winter Soldier who wouldn't launch the so there was a dude in Winter Soldier that when S.H.I.E.L.D. got taken over, he wouldn't launch whatever codes or nuclear, whatever happened in there.
Right. Oh, the guy that says Captain's orders.
Right. He was back in this one on the S.H.I.E.L.D. carrier.
Oh, he was? I didn't even notice. Now I gotta watch that again.
So I was like, okay, there's a significance to the guy, and I couldn't really place it until I saw the Easter egg on it later on. I was like, oh, I knew it from someplace.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I did not notice that.
One or a little small, this is very small, great, but it stood out to me in the first V1 was, it seemed like, yes, the Avengers made a point to try to rescue all the civilians in Sokovia, but it seemed like they put a heavy emphasis on it, which is good because they're the good guys. They're supposed to save people. But it seemed like, in my mind, immediately went to, like, you know, they're trying to make fun of Man of Steel. Like, see, we try to save people. They're now disasters.
There was some of that said, actually, on the Twitters.
So. Yeah, like,
but then I thought about it some more, and yet they did make a point of doing the same thing in Avengers, the first Avengers. They tried to save people too, so.
Right.
But in this one, it just, that was like the first thing that came to my mind during all those scenes. Yeah. All right. What do we like?
Well, there's a lot to like. I really liked, some of the characterizations. You know, I really liked, as much as I'm not a fan of changing canon, you know, and adopting some of the Ultimate stuff, I kind of like the Hawkeye stuff, you know, with giving him a family.
Yeah.
And like kind of grounding him and giving him something else outside, you know, like kind of establishing what his outside of work life is.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that. It was a nice touch, I think. Even though a lot of people didn't like the, you know, that it was a breather scene between, you know, like action sequences and you know, it's literally a retreat to a farm.
Yeah. Speaking of going back to something that I didn't like, when in the beginning when they were, you know, going to take over that facility, when he was the one that got hurt, I'm like, oh, come on, really?
Yeah,
could have tried it with anybody else, but that's right. But that said, the fact that they tried to him as being kind of almost, I guess, being the one to ground the team with all of that was that actually interesting. Oh, and the one other part with him. Oh wait, but well, back up. So that part with him was for me a slightly jarring too, because I had totally forgotten about how they, you know, that in the Ultimates he had a family. And on all that, I was like, "Hey, wait a minute, where is this coming from?"
Right.
Oh. And I read the Ultimates, so I knew nothing about that.
I mean, yeah. I read the main Ultimates miniseries, and I'm not 100% sure they really explored that in those issues. I just remembered something else I didn't like, even though I know that there's, you know, they tried to explain it away in the movie. But seriously, Vision, picking up the hammer, seriously, seriously.
Actually, I kind of like that because it was like, oh, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, wait. That's not supposed to happen, people.
I had that in my list of things I like. Just because they made a point to show that in the trailer trailer or TV spots.
Oh, they showed it?
Well, they didn't show him. They showed everybody else doing it.
I knew there'd be a callback to that later on in the movie. You don't focus on that so much to not do a callback to it later in the movie. I figured it would be Cap that would link that would pick it up.
Or
Black Widow.
No,
because she never attempted to.
Exactly, because she was like, well, she didn't need to have that question answered. Which actually she did. And this is not so much a spoiler because I don't think anybody read it. But in the one of the Age of Ultron, and I don't know if this was actually intended or not, but in one of the Age of Ultron tie-in books.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up becoming Thor.
Really?
So that could have been a callback to that, but I don't know if that would have picked up for anybody.
Interesting. But yeah, I was really hoping that Cap would have picked it up.
Yeah.
That was annoying.
Yeah, but that was kind of funny. And then they try to explain it away later on. That was actually pretty good. I was like, yeah, they just can't put their hands around that one. Which, their reasoning made some sense. I was like, well, he's... And they never said, speaking of... Well, let's go to Vision. I liked Vision. I was... The origin of him still kind of slightly put off on him because, you know, that's not exactly the way he came about.
Right. But
they were going to take liberties and they weren't going to use Hank Pym. That was already established.
Yeah, they weren't going to use Pym and they obviously weren't going to put Simon Williams in.
Exactly. So they would have had to address a couple of things. Well, yeah, I guess that is also true because I forgot about that part. But it would have been Pym's brain patterns.
Right.
If they had gone with one side of the story. But that said, I like the Vision part and the 2 points. There was something about him I was going to bring up.
Oh, the phasing?
That too, which they did.
The phasing, yeah. They just introduced it. And I'm like, wait, where does this come from? What kind of power is he exhibiting? Where, you know, like what part of his... is it the vibranium that they're incorporating into the... you know, into his body in this version of the Vision origin that allows him to phase?
Right. Like
they did show that, right? Like when they're in combat.
Yes, because he ripped apart a few different people. Yeah, so yeah, they faded, but they didn't just show how he did it. They just like, hey, he's got these powers. Wow, there you go.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking maybe it could be part of the soul gem. I mean, the mind gem. I don't know.
True enough.
They never really went into that, or just because he's a. Yeah, I don't know. That one kind of didn't make sense, but I kind of went with it because hey, we know what his powers are, so. Did anybody send Doug that link?
Which you got it, Tim?
You on it?
What's going on?
Doug's saying send me a link. Send me an invite.
Oh, okay.
But, speaking of Vision. What do we think about the look of him?
It's all right. I like the fact that they immediately went with the cape and he just puts it on, you know, he manifests a cape and it's just normal. No one says anything about it. I'm like, that's fine.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because he was looking up. He was like when he was talking to Thor and he was kind of looking over down like, huh. And then had
Thor's like his big brother.
Yeah.
He helped create him with the lightning. He gave his seal of approval.
Yeah. So that part was kind of funny. It was actually you could almost use that to a callback to the hammer thing also. He's like, well, he lifted the hammer, which I'm trying to remember he hadn't lifted the hammer by that time because he didn't do it until after that.
I like that there was a lot more scenes of the team together.
Yeah,
working together and just at you know on their downtime.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And did anyone else find that funny and ironic that, you know, Cap gives this big speech, you know, on the floating piece of rock, and he's like, if you die, walk it off.
Oh, yeah.
I like
can't run it off either.
Yeah, actually, clearly. But yeah, that was actually pretty good. It didn't necessarily have the same resonance as when they came together in the first movie, but mm-hmm. it was still pretty an epic part. It's like, all right, this is where it all comes together. So, and that part where, oh, that was the other part I liked when Hawkeye was talking to Scarlet Witch. You know, when they were in that building, it's like, look, as soon as you walk out of here, you're an Avenger. So he's gonna stay here and get rescued or come out and fight with everybody. Right. And then she just came out a little later on, which we knew was gonna happen. But like, I enjoyed that part.
And then my favorite moment of the whole movie was actually the end. When we got to see the new Avengers lineup.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, they were talking about, you know, new team or whatever, and then they walked through that door. I was like, oh, who are we going to see?
Right.
Like, oh, it's people we've already saw earlier tonight. But it still kind of got me hyped.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to see maybe Black Panther, and I know
who. Well, we weren't going to see them because they didn't introduce them. So.
Hey, I was ready for the camera to show anyone.
I know, right? You know what? There was a part of me that wanted to see Cap's Kooky Quartet, but which,
yeah,
since Quicksilver wasn't around, that wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was still glad to see the lineup. My brother texted me like right after I was as I was walking out of the theater, like this team doesn't seem as strong as the old team. I'm like, nah, don't worry about it. That was a much smaller team when Cap took over. So this is that much bigger.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm like, this one is actually pretty well balanced.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have, you know, what's funny is that, you know, for longtime Avengers readers, it kind of made me, you know, it made me smile a little bit when they basically had Thor duke it out with Ultron mano a mano, right? And because that's generally how Cap deploys Thor. He's like, all right, he does everything else. He's like, oh, well, you know what? We're down to it. We'll send in Thor, and he'll duke it out with the big bad, right?
Right.
You know, obviously that's the one weakness in the team when he's not around. You know, like who's like the real powerhouse? I guess you would say all of Vision. No. In the current, in the new Avengers lineup, it would be like Vision and then War Machine.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, those are like the real heavy hitters.
The one thing that bugged me about the movie.
Dirt! Yay! Hold on.
Are you reporting from your car?
No, I'm in the house, but
it's the bunker.
The camera, I turned the camera into my front door security camera, and I forgot to turn it off and turn it back around before I started the chat. But there was one thing that really bothered me about the movie, besides the fact that it was like way too long.
Okay.
The thing that bugged me the most is that the battle at the end, when they're protecting the MacGuffin that was keeping the island floating, mm-hmm. and they're trying to stop the Ultron robots from destroying it. And if you watch, a half dozen of those robots fly right over it and go past it, and when they go past it is when they get taken out.
Right.
So technically, they lost that battle like a dozen times. Because all it would have taken is one of those things to kamikaze right into it, and it was over. And I guess just because of their reactions, the way they were moving around in front of the green screen, and when they added them in later, it only worked out that way to have them fly past it and then get taken out. But that really kind of bothered me when you're sitting there watching it going, they lost. Like, they're like that guy just had it, and he flew off for no reason. And it happened again, and it happened again, and it happened again. And there were so many times in that span of, like, 30 seconds where they technically lost the battle, but, you know, because they're Avengers, they got to keep going.
Mm.
That was the one thing that just bugged me the most about the whole thing. So anyways, yeah. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was good.
Brad, I don't know if I was about to say, Dirt, I don't know if you missed it, but I know I definitely weighed in and said I liked the first one better. Yeah. You know, for differing reasons, but I'm still firmly in the thought that the first one is still stronger.
Overall, I'm still sticking with the Winter Soldier as my favorite one so far.
Oh yes, I think that's probably, you know, consensus.
Yeah. It's funny having different conversations with people trying to, like, first, you know, the question is, you know, rank your top Marvel movies. All I know is Winter Soldier is one.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it's like Avengers 2, Avengers 1, Guardians of the Galaxy, all fall. The
first Iron Man.
Yeah, I always forget about the first Iron Man.
The first Iron Man was phenomenal. You know, the first Iron Man and the first Avengers for me is probably a tie for two.
And then Guardians is so hard for me to rank. Like when Bruce West said, almost, you know, I kind of don't want to rank it with the rest of them because it's so different from the other Marvel movies.
Right.
For me, that's like three or four. Because no one really expected that movie. Like, I mean, you know, being an old school Guardians fan, that's one thing. But right. No one really expected that movie to be as good as it was. And the fact that it, you know, it went there. I mean, it was great.
Well, the fact that it sold these characters that were so you know, they were not household names.
Right.
You know, prior to the movie, you did not see these characters on T-shirts. You did not see these characters on lunchboxes. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it was able to, you know, to establish these heretofore unknown characters, you know, and do it in such a, you know, and tell such a great story, you know, that's the biggest surprise of them all.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that kind of struck me about Age of Ultron was the idea that, all right, Iron Man has a franchise, so we're just kind of going to talk about him a little bit. And Captain America has a franchise, we'll talk about him a little bit. Hulk ain't getting another movie anytime soon, it looks like, so we'll put some focus on him. Black Widow's not getting a movie, we'll put some mm-hmm. focus on her. Hawkeye's not getting a movie, we'll focus on him. Mm-hmm. So it was really a chance to take all those other secondary characters and try to do something with them, mm-hmm. and all those other guys that have these successful franchises are just kind of there for the big battles.
Right. Well, isn't that the point of a team-up book anyway?
Right.
Isn't that right, what happens like, in the comics anyway?
Yeah, like in different parts of the battle, somebody's just going to rise up and have a, you know, have a good part, or a good moment.
So it almost, you know, it definitely played out a lot like that.
Best part of the movie for you, Dirk?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. The chopping wood scene? I don't know.
Chopping wood.
Oh, yeah, when Cap just ripped that one in part.
Yeah.
He's like, well, okay.
And Iron Man leaves, he's like, don't touch my pile.
Yeah. I will say, yeah, Stark had some good one-liners, especially during the fight with Hulk. Like when Hulk spit his tooth at him, and he was like, I'm sorry.
Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep.
Yeah.
All right, so that's probably, that should be a good enough Age of Ultron discussion.
Yep.
Since we've got dirt on with this.
Wait, one thing I will add real quick.
Go for it.
Is that Quicksilver died, and it didn't mean a thing. Like, he was such a nothing character, it felt like, through the film. And for him to be taken out, like, you just, okay, whatever. Like, I didn't feel any sadness that we lost the character. I didn't feel bad that he was gone, because it just, he felt like he was there just to give you a couple plot points to pop in when you needed him, but otherwise he seemed completely worthless in the film.
I don't know if I completely agree with that.
I kind of would have wanted to see him do a little bit more with him, but who knows what's going to happen down the line.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. If someone goes, oh, he's dead, they can never do anything with him again. It's like, yeah, and they killed Coulson, and he's got a TV show. So
exactly.
It's probably going to be all right.
Yeah. But what were you going to say?
Anyway, back to you, Tim.
Oh, I was going to say, since we have Dirk back with us, I know we didn't get to it last week, but do you have any thoughts on your C2E2 weekend?
Yeah, 3 days is too long. you know, I don't know.
Did you get a lot of content for PopCultureNetwork.com?
Not really. It was weird because what ended up happening is we made a lot more, I guess you could say, behind-the-scenes connections. And we have some projects now in the works that I can't really say anything about, but I think
they'll be to some of the situations. Huh?
I did a couple interviews, you know, talked to a couple people, but it was really weird because, first of all, DC didn't have a booth because they're in the middle of moving. So they didn't have anything.
That's always an excuse. They always have an excuse for
not having a booth there.
Do what?
Do they usually have a booth there?
Yeah, they usually do. DC and Marvel usually have huge booths on the floor. Marvel had a booth, but unlike past years, it was mostly just built around creators coming in, sitting at the table, signing some stuff, and walking away. Whereas they usually, in the past, had done a lot of stuff. They have like a little stage set up, and they have guys in costumes come up, and you know, they talk to them, and they hand out prizes, and they do like trivia questions to give away, you know, posters mm-hmm. and whatever. And they did a little bit of that, not as much. It was much more subdued than it has been the past few years. And I don't know if it's just because the state of the industry or because Secret Wars hadn't started yet, so they really couldn't talk about anything that was going on, you know, that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
But it just, it felt smaller, just in the sense that you didn't have a lot of the big stuff going on that you normally do.
Okay.
I mean, but floor-wise, it was big. But just, it wasn't the you know, the headline making show that it usually is. And I did see a lot more of vendors selling random stuff. You know, people complain that there's like too much cosplay going on at these shows, and then people complain that you know, there's not enough place for the artists to set up and sell their stuff. And this show really had a lot of just random people selling energy drinks and swords and leather corsets. And
well, I was like, swords isn't that uncommon, but energy drinks is something.
It's not
uncommon,
but there were like three or four of them.
Okay.
You know, usually you have like one big booth that's selling the stuff just for the cosplay stuff, you know,
or
selling the you know, Legend of Zelda Master Sword or, you know, something like that. But there were several of them, and a lot of them weren't selling knives that tied in with stuff. It was just like, hey, we've got 6-inch blades, you know, it's just like, come buy a dagger.
That could be kind of a cosplay thing, though.
Maybe.
Right, but I know what Dirt's talking about.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
me
like,
too, but I mean, yeah.
Stuff, you know, yeah.
Like, I know what he means in the sense that there's usually, like, one or two big vendors that are catering directly to the cosplayers.
Right.
And this seems more like a knife show.
Right. So I don't know if it's a sign of, you know, going more mainstream, that you're just, you know, getting more random people that just want to talk to the crowd and be involved in something like that, so you have...
You know, get that kind of foot traffic, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But I will say that they were in a bigger space, and they spaced everything out more this year. So even on Saturday, when it was crowded and there were a lot of people, I actually remarked at the time that it felt like maybe the show wasn't doing as well because you weren't shoulder-to-shoulder with people.
Because
usually it's, you know, you're trying to walk down the aisles, and it's 5-6 people across, and it's packed tight, and you're pushing. It's like being at a kegger in college, and you're trying to get through the living room, you know? And it wasn't that bad this year. So the only thing that I can assume, and looking at the numbers were up slightly, I think, from the year before. So they really just spaced everything out farther and just put more room, and it actually made it better for the people that were in the wheelchairs and the little scooters, you know, trying to make their way through. And I don't know if that was a consideration or not, but... it really helped to alleviate those crowds, and it just didn't feel like you were packed as tight with everybody else in there. So that made it a little more comfortable and a little more enjoyable.
Well, that's pretty cool that it sounds like Reed Pop is learning from their experiences at this particular venue.
Yeah, well, and they've been at the same building for every year, but they keep moving around within the building.
Right.
So, like, last year they were on the other side of the hall, and, like, the year before they were in the south building instead of the north building, or the north building instead of, I don't know, whatever building. But they keep moving around inside this venue trying to find the best spot. And I think this year they finally got it to where they've got the maximized amount of space. And there was even open area. So there were guys that were, you know, they had like the juggling sticks and whatever, and they just made their little circle off to the side because there was room. You know, there was just big open areas in certain spots where they could just sit there and do that, and they weren't getting in anyone's way. They weren't blocking anyone's table in Artist Alley, you know. So,
right.
Yeah, so just overall, it just seemed to work out a whole lot better.
Cool. Well, that compares very favorably to my experience at New York Comic Con, where Reed Pop seems to have, you know, really refined how they use the space.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's definitely, you know, that's definitely similar to my experience so far with them. You know, I'm curious to see how they adapt to a different venue for Special Edition. I know I've mentioned this before. The Special Edition Con that's coming up is going to be in a different venue, so I'm curious to compare that to where it was last year. So, you know, to see how they adapt to a different space. But, you know, I'm glad to hear that you had a good time. Did you pick up anything of note?
I just picked up a bunch of random stuff, really. You know, there are always the guys that have, like, the $5 trades or the half-price trades, you know, and so I dug through there and just grabbed some random books. There's a couple old crossovers, some Justice League stuff and some old Detective Comics stuff that I just kind of dug through the dollar bins, you know, and found some of that stuff to piece together. There was a place selling custom Minecraft figures,
Okay.
You can actually create the skin on an iPad, and then they'll print it out on these thick vinyl stickers and put it on the figures that they've created, so you can make your own little Minecraft figures. So my son was blown away with that. So we got a couple Minecraft figures, and I did get one print, but it's actually a bootleg print. Disney, when the new Tron movie came out, they released in their members only rewards site, if you buy their Blu-rays and save the little points, you can order these lithographs. And one was of the original Tron movie and one was of the new Tron Legacy, and you put them side by side and it was like a mirror image of each other. And some guy actually had gotten those and put them together as one print instead of two separate prints and was selling it as one piece. So you could buy this one piece of artwork that had the two prints together. So that was the artwork I ended up buying, was a bootleg off of that. But the show was well attended enough that every artist I saw in there was sketching furiously.
Nice.
And a couple of them even had signs that, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday, they said, you know, if you order a sketch now, it won't be ready until tomorrow afternoon.
Wow.
You know, just so people, if they had the one day pass, it's like, hey, it's not going to happen today.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty. I mean, I'm used to seeing those signs where, you know, like commissions are all done. You know, the list is all filled. So.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool that you know, you're seeing signs like that. Like, hey, don't even try. You know.
Right. So yeah, overall, it was a good show, but 3 days is just really getting to me. I'm old.
Listen, they've already expanded New York Comic Con to 4. I can't do 4.
Yeah. There's no way. No way. But I did get the guys at Lantern City, which is a new series coming from Boom Studios. They gave me a preview copy of their upcoming first issue of that and one of the prints from Dave Dorman of a variant cover he did of a painting of that. So I've got that to go through and put something up on the site. I'll be writing about that in a little bit. I did an interview with the two guys who are producing the series and writing the TV show and the novel and all the stuff that tie together with that. But Boom Studios, it looks like, is actually throwing a lot of effort behind the comic series, so I'm hoping that it actually does well because it sounds really interesting. It's about steampunk alternate universe, and it's the whole idea of the lower classes, you know, fighting against the steampunk stormtroopers, more or less, that work for the king and the uprising. And they actually have figured out about 500 years of history for this civilization, and the novels are kind of set back in the past, and the comic series is set a little more closer to the era of the TV series that they're working on. So it's actually kind of interesting to sit down and listen to the way that they talk about how they mapped all that out and how Boom is basically, you know, they gave them an ongoing series. And they mapped out the whole first year, and they have the first year arc as one giant story that they're going to tell across the first 12 issues. So it's interesting to listen to them talk about the process that they go through and how they juggle all that stuff together. So I recorded it in audio, hoping to put it up as a podcast, but the audio is pretty terrible. So I'm going to have to type it up into something a little more useful and put that up on the site. But I'm looking forward to that. Lantern City is the name of the series coming from Boom Studios. I think it actually comes out in about 3 or 4 weeks, so that's something to look forward to.
Which series again?
It's called
Lantern City.
It's funny you talk about Boom Studios because I'm hopefully cooking up an interview with the set of creators from there. I don't want to give it away in case it falls through, but stay tuned.
There you go.
All right, so anyway, what else is going on?
Do we want to do Free Comic Book Day?
Yeah, how's Free Comic Book Day at your store?
Oh, my gosh. All I did was sit on a register for 6 hours.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, not for my lower back. But.
Oh, there you go. Well, you know. That sound is music to your ears, or your boss's ears.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get commissions, so. but no, we had a couple local artists that came in. You know, last year we had Robert Atkins, who works for IDW, and his brother Brian, who does some stuff down around the St. Louis area. But this year, we had a guy who does just underground comics here in town, and then another artist, J.B. Rowe, who's up from Chicago, does some underground comics and stuff up there. And we had those two guys down, and they were just basically doing sketches. And people could come up and tell them anything. You know, I want Doom Patrol from 1992, and they would hit it. They got it. They knew exactly what they were talking about and were able to do it. And they just sat and did sketches all day. And so that was really cool. We had a special edition of Secret Wars that was sent to us from Marvel. Ooh. It actually had the name of our store printed on the inside cover.
Wow.
So they sent us two. So, of course, the owner kept one for himself. And the other one we gave away. If you made a purchase, you got an entry into the drawing. And usually those store-marked copies go for about $1,200. So we had one lucky person that was able to win that. That wasn't me.
Mm.
So, anyway.
You mean you didn't rig the lottery?
Man, I tried. Let me tell you. But did not work out for me at all. Were you able to find any of the free Comic Day stuff?
I have not yet. Just for the listeners and viewers out there, I was remiss in my duties as a member of the Comic Book Chronicles. I did not make it anywhere to honor or enjoy Free Comic Book Day. I did not get any of the free comic books. Did not give any store any extra money. Kind of sad. Very sad for me.
Well, I know DC put the Divergence book up on Comixology as a free download. So you can go to Comixology and just click on the book and it's free. It'll be added to your library.
Right.
Dark Horse put their two books in the Dark Horse app. So you can go into there, click on them, and get those for free from Dark Horse. Marvel's books have not appeared, but I was talking to somebody and they reminded me that last year it took, I think, 2 weeks before they showed up on the Marvel website. So check back in a couple of weeks, you might find them there. But I offered, I'll send you a pack. I've got
I don't want to be, you know what it is? I don't want to make it a bother. You know, like I have more than enough patience to deal with it. I just thought that, you know, it was sad that someone who co-hosts a weekly comic book review show couldn't even tear himself away from the household things he had to do to make it to Free Comic Book Day. It's kind of sad.
Yeah. The only couple that I found was there was the Secret Wars one at the shop that I went to, and there was also this what is this? So 75 year Marvel thing that they had.
That actually came out
a while back, right?
About a month ago, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of figured it had been something like that, but that was the only thing of that. Well, that. Of note to me, anyway, they had a couple of other books in there, but
there was the Avengers one that came out about a month ago. That Marvel one came out last year, I think, or earlier in the year. Dirt.
Oh, you're right. It was Avengers themed, wasn't it?
Right, because I got the I got
Marvel 75th was last fall. Yeah.
Right.
And I picked up the pay one for the Avengers. I think I still have it here somewhere.
The Jack Kirby cover one.
Yes. So awesome.
Yeah, the other thing that Marvel put out was an all-new, all-different Avengers.
Which I didn't see that
the
one.
New team, which, I mean, to be honest, I read this, and I don't know that I'm going to be reading Avengers.
Interesting.
It's technically fine. I mean, there's no real problem with it. I just wasn't... I didn't feel like I really cared about the story.
Okay.
You were whelmed? Maybe underwhelmed?
It was just your straight up plain superhero team, and part of the thing I really liked about Avengers and New Avengers under Hickman was the fact that it was really one big story and it all was leading to one particular place. And now that they're starting over after Secret Wars, it is basically just your multicolor superhero team, your bright reds, your bright blues, your bright golds flying through the sky, fighting the bad guy. That's what it comes down to. So, again, there was nothing really wrong with it, but I just read it and I was like, I don't really feel like it's something I really got to follow up with.
Yeah, it's basically, it's like when sporting teams make a change in whoever their manager is, especially like in football and I guess all the big three, football, baseball, basketball. Like if the former coach or manager was like a disciplinarian, they'll get a player's coach to come in to replace him. Or if it was a player's coach, they're replacing with a disciplinarian. So Avengers under Hickman last, 3 years, I guess, has been this big overarching epic adventure with 25-plus members. So now after Secret Wars, get it down to a core, 6 or 7, however many it is, of them now, and make it diverse with, you know, young and new characters. And
yeah,
so I can understand, and, you know, maybe not liking the Switch.
Well, the team that's built here, you've got Iron Man, you've got Captain America, Falcon, you've got Vision, you've got Thor, female Thor, you've got Nova, you've got Miles Morales, and you've got Ms. Marvel.
Right.
And that's the team. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, all the characters are fine. Again, it's not anything I really have a problem with, but it almost felt like Saturday morning cartoonish in a way.
Gotcha.
And it's Mark Waid, so that gives you some idea that it's...
Yeah, there's a little bit more superheroing, you know, superheroing involved.
Part of me wonders, was the, you know, since it was going to be a free comic book day offering, that they specifically make it more, you know, kiddie and just, you know, for the broad audience.
Who are you calling a broad?
Ah!
There it is. My store I went to Saturday was pretty packed, which was good to see, especially because I don't actually go every week and get physical comics. I just buy straight on the iPad.
Yep.
So it was, felt good to go into a store for a change. The store or business right next door to them, I guess, closed. So they, I guess, were using that as like a flow area. So they had, you could go in either building and get your free comics. It was three, you know, you have your choice of three. So, and of course, being the big two homer, I got the Marvel head. Secret Wars and the all-new, all-different Avengers, and then the Divergence book. So that was my three, and I was done after that. And I got a trade. I got a... I forget what it was now. Umbrella Academy is what I picked up. And I actually might go back and get... Because I was going to buy... I can't remember what it is now. I was going to buy it, but I wasn't sure if I had already bought it digitally, the trade for it or not. Now I can't remember. That's how my mind goes.
Yeah.
But,
For me, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm done.
Oh, I was about to say, for me, it was like, this was my first time going in here because I went to that Second and Charles place that you mentioned, Tim, last week. And it was like right down the street from my house. I don't know why I hadn't gone in there before. So I was thinking, okay, well, let me scope this place around and see what they have, and went through the stacks of the, well, I went through and found the little section where they had, in the beginning, where they had, like, you know, little toys and stuff, and they saw there was a Hawkeye Select figure that I almost wanted, but it wasn't the one with this wasn't the one that's, I think, about to come out with the pizza dog or whatnot. Mm. I was like, I'll wait, and then they had some Funko Pop pictures, which that Vision that I showed earlier is from, and I bought that from there, so I figured, I'll get this. Then I get my two, because they only had a limit of two. Like, they had a small rack where the free comic book day stuff was, and the limit were limiting people to two.
Wow.
So I picked up Secret Wars, and I picked up that Marvel one that I showed you earlier. I thought about Divergence, but I was like, I got a feeling I was going to be able to find that. And sure enough, it was out there on Comixology, which I, you know, me and DC at this point, is a kind of a not a side note, but...
I got you.
Just kind of a cursory thing. You know, there's actually a couple of sneak peeks we may talk about later that I'm kind of interested in outside of what I've been reading. But that said, they had a quite interesting sale. And if I had not been up all night and gone there when they were open, I would have stayed up like probably 2 more hours in because their back issue stuff was like buy 5, get 5 free.
Wow.
And so I went through like probably a good 10 long boxes, 10, 20, and there were people kind of like they had a couple of tables full of long boxes, then they had some stuff underneath, so it would have taken a while to go through that. And
yeah, my second Charles had the same deal going too.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, if only I had thought about this a little bit, if I had thought this through a little bit more, but I had something to do later on, so I was in there a couple of hours as it was. So I actually found some random stuff. I said I got this She-Hulk number one, and Young Allies, a couple of those.
Cool.
And now this, which I thought I had to trade this, and I still might, but I find it's a single issue I might go for.
You don't have any of those?
I thought I had the trade. It's probably back there somewhere, but I don't know if I actually do. So it was like, well, single issue, and I'll be on a hunt because I'm going to Heroes
for the rest.
Yeah,
I finally picked up the last issue of that. I think issue six. I finally picked that up, a few years back. It took me a while to track it down, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. And found this, the first copy of, issue of The Crew.
Sure, I remember.
Which I know I have a trade of that, but I was like, let me see if I can find the rest of these issues, single issues, but I didn't. And this was a pretty good quality of this. I'm just kind of surprised about the quality of some of these books. And they were all like a dollar.
Yep.
So I ended up getting like 11, don't ask me why, 11 books.
For a dollar, that's fine.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, get five, get five free. I could have kept, because there was a couple of Vision, I think from that 90s Vision miniseries that was there, and I could have picked up some of that stuff. Then I picked up this What The, and I know I have a couple. And I know I have some of these in a long box somewhere. Awesome. But, yeah.
That's awesome.
But, and that could be a duplicate for all I know. And also a few.
Oh my God, Forceworks! Mid-90s stuff. Oh my goodness.
So if you don't know, it was when Iron Man, Scarlet Witch, U.S. Agent, and Spider Woman left
the West Coast Avengers.
The West Coast Avengers, because there was that whole "Hey, we don't kill" deal going on when Bobby got kidnapped. It wasn't that, but this came after that. This is a very 90s book. So there's like four or five issues of that I bought.
Wow. That brings back so many memories, dude.
And I know I have some of them in there. I may even have a full run of those, so they might be.
Do I even have any Force Works in my collection? Now that I've been cataloging my collection, and thank God I'm finally almost done. I wonder if I have any Force Works in my collection. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I think if I still have them, they're still with my West Coast Avengers shirt box. And that's under a pile of some stuff, so I don't know. But over all of that, and like the Vision I got earlier, it was a pretty good deal out there. And I did get, well, this is the weird thing. Tim, I don't know if you knew about it. I mean, you get anything from there, but I got a pull list sheet from there.
Oh, okay.
But it doesn't have any Marvel stuff on it.
Don't you just fill out yourself, or does it work a different way?
Well, I mean, yeah, you can find out. They basically said, hey, if it's not on here, you can put it on the back and we'll see if we can get it. But I thought it was weird. And they didn't, it's not like they have full runs of stuff. Like, they had a lot of the, Convergent stuff and a couple of Dark Horse books and Boom and whatnot, but there was no Marvel on there at all. So I didn't know if that was something that was the case, which they did have some Marvel books there in the new release section. But
cool. It may have been one of those things where they put the sheet together back when Marvel was still in the throes of announcing the Battle World stuff, the Last Day stuff, so they weren't really sure what was coming out.
Yeah. Okay. So I was thinking, I was like, you know what, I could get a couple of physical issues of probably due to Star Wars run, I guess.
Yeah, I'm trying to say no to physical, it just takes up so much space.
Well, when
I got back into collecting books, I was like, I'm going to all digital. I keep what I have and whatever, but I just happen to get this stuff here.
I mean, it's fun. You know what it is? It's fun to collect when you're not a completist.
Mm.
You know, when you're not trying to complete an entire run, or if you are trying to complete a run, it's not like expansive. That's when it becomes manageable. When your collection is literally like 7,000 books, it's a bit much.
Yeah, that was like with me at C2E2. I wasn't trying to get a complete run of anything. I wasn't trying to get random issues to plug holes in some. It was just more along the lines of, I'd like to read that five-part crossover.
Right.
I'm going to find those five books and just
exactly. Kind of read that. Exactly. And just real quick, shout out to one of our loyal viewers and listeners, Matt Wang 97, Sun Knight. Anyway, so we give him a shout out. So I'm glad that everybody had a good free comic book day. It sounds like I missed out on at least enjoying the atmosphere.
Oh, there was one I did miss. I don't know if you have a copy of this, Dirt. The Hip Hop Family Tree had a 3-in-1. I don't know if you got it.
We had it at the store. I don't know if I have it in this pile or not. Let me take a look here real quick.
Hey, if you got two.
That's what I'm saying. If you have, because they didn't have that one at the store I went to, and I was going to go to another store, but then I was like, okay, that's on the other side of town, and I was getting kind of tired.
I don't have one in this stack, but I'll check when I get back to the store.
Okay, yeah, if you do, please let me know.
Left, but not a whole lot left.
Right. I didn't check and see if Fantagraphics has a digital copy somewhere, you know.
If they do, I presume it's going to be through Comixology Submit.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I presume that they would eventually, just like Dirt was saying, you know, all I have to do, in a sense, is be patient. But if I really want the physical copies, you know, I guess Dirt can check to see if he's got any spares. But thanks, Dirt. Appreciate the offer.
Yeah, really.
And also, this week is Children's Book Week. So we had some leftover free comic book day books, and so we just pulled out all the ones that were kids-friendly. And now if you walk in the store, there's a display set up of all the kid-friendly books that are available. So we still have more free comic book day kid-centric ones that are free, and then all the kids' books we have in the store are 20% off. So it's an ongoing sale trying to get kids, you know, hooked on the crack that is comic books.
Awesome.
All right. Change of plans because it's already well into the show.
I love it.
Yeah, no news. I love it.
Wait. Let's just do two stories if there's anything out there that you really want to talk about. Like Suicide Squad's pictures coming out.
Oh, yeah, I guess we can talk about that. So,
this is the stuff I remember, you know,
two things, because we need to get to the reviews part.
Yep.
So I posted the picture on theclicknation.com of, was it David Ayer? Ayer? How do you say his last name? I assume he's the director.
I don't know.
Of Suicide Squad. Tweeted out pictures of the whole Suicide Squad and then one solo one of Deadshot, played by Will Smith. Let's see, there was, of course, Deadshot, Rick Flag, Captain Flag, whatever his name is, Harley Quinn, Killer Croc, some guy named Slipknot, DC Enchantress. I forget who else was in it. But, yeah, it looked fine. And then there was some cast photos taken on set. More kind of Deadshot. Will Smith with the Deadshot helmet or mask and the scope up over his eye looked pretty cool.
It was also over the wrong eye.
Well, yeah, but that's an issue of not wanting the actor to fall over on stuff while he's in the middle of shooting.
I was going to say, it's also could be a case of an image being flipped.
Mirrored, yeah.
It's probably because in the comic it's over his
right eye.
His right eye, which is your aiming eye. Mm-hmm. But when they're making the movie, it's like you can't cover that person's eye because if something happens and they squint, that's the eye they squint with. And if that's covered by some prosthetic, then suddenly you're going to have a guy like running into walls and bumping into stuff. So, but honestly, as soon as I saw him in this street clothes outfit, everyone was like, oh my gosh, why is he dressed like Superfly or, you know, whatever. And I go, that's how he looked when he first debuted. And I pulled up the old photo and that's what they're going for is his street clothes look is a throwback to his original first appearance where he was in this tuxedo and he was originally trying to be the vigilante that Batman couldn't and basically take over in everybody's eyes. But, yeah, as soon as I saw that outfit, I was like, oh, well, that's what they're going for. And I'm totally fine. Everything I've seen so far of this movie, I'm fine with.
Cool.
I'm glad that you approve, Dirt. I mean, I don't have any real feelings about it. I liked the Harley Quinn look. You know, I thought she was fine, even though I do prefer the animated series look. You know, that looks far more cartoonish in terms of the outfit. But you know, obviously, you know, with the modern take, you know, and especially with the way Harley looks in the books now, I see where they're going. So I can appreciate, you know, how they've put together her costume. You know, with regards to the other characters, you know, there's only so much that you can tell from a static single picture. So
right,
we'll see how that works out in the movie.
Also, everybody was freaking out over the Joker picture that was online, and
they even
came out and said later all those tattoos are nothing to do with how he's going to look in the movie. They were just doing that for the publicity shot for the Joker's anniversary.
Right.
You know, so all those people freaking out about the tattoos were freaking out over something that actually has nothing to do with the movie. It's not going to be in there.
That never happens.
Yeah, right? Perish forbid. All right, so is there another bit of news that we wanted to, or at least movie or TV news that we wanted to just drop real quick?
Yeah, a lot of people going to be in Civil War. Hugh Jackman says he's not going to be in, Wolverine after the third one.
There you go.
They finalized that DC spinoff.
What's the title for it? I saw that.
DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh my god.
Oh, yeah.
The Arrow Flash spinoff.
Right. I understand that this is based off of a comic book title, but could you come up with a less clunky title for a TV show?
Wait, seriously? What is this?
So there was Arrow and
Flash. It was dropped like today, I think.
Yeah,
today was a big news day.
Yeah, as per usual. But yeah, this is basically the Arrow Flash spinoff that they've been rumoring for months and months. And
Rip Hunter comes from the future and says that some big bad thing is going to happen and they have to stop it. So he assembles a team of villains and heroes from the Arrow and Flash universe. And right. A couple of new people like Hot Girl, and I think there's another person.
So it's basically just giving him an excuse to bring up new characters every two or three episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that that Hot Girl is going to be in, a couple others going to be in the Flash season finale.
Mm. Yeah, they already announced that, hey, we're going to be in the Flash season finale. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Goodness. Legends of Tomorrow, my goodness.
Yep.
Name's fine, whatever. Yeah, Breaking news, Agent Carter was just renewed for a second season.
Yeah! Oh, cool. That's awesome.
That decision kind of quick. That's good.
So the news day continues.
That's awesome.
I was excited to see that the Supergirl got picked up first.
Right.
CBS.
I was about to mention
that's right. They put it in full order, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not even like an order of six. To see how it does, and then get a back end like they did full season.
Nice.
I mean, at this point, the way all these superhero shows are going, might as well.
Sure. All right.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got renewed also, I see.
Well, yeah. My only concern with Supergirl is whether or not they do it as a Smallville type teen drama. Is she in high school, or is they going to do it as straight up superhero show? You know.
Mm.
All right. Interesting, because we've seen both takes recently. You know, the animated series had Supergirl Kara as the younger, you know, as a much younger teen. And then we have what's been going on in the books where she's a bit older.
Right.
All righty. Any
comments? The next Star Wars spinoff is going to be Boba Fett origin story, which we kind of knew was going to happen. But I think that might be the one that... I'm right. So last week we talked about Josh Trank leaving one of the Star Wars anthology from. This is the one that he left.
Oh, all right. Too bad. So sad.
Yeah, pretty much. But that's it. Comic
news. Screw you, Josh Trank.
Well, yeah.
You heard it.
We'll see how FF happens.
Come at me, dog.
And I'm going to hopefully write up an article on the website giving my thoughts on the Civil War and the large cast and are certain heroes even needed for it.
Sure. Yeah, no, where's Bill Foster?
Not created yet.
Yeah. And, he would never be created, trust me. Because, well, they would have to go through him being Goliath and all that kind of good mess, so that's not going to happen.
All right. Wow, yeah. There's really not a lot of comic news. I mean, there's a lot, but there's nothing earth-shattering.
Yeah.
All right, ad time. Let's go with the Amazon script today. Visit coldslitherpodcast.com, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon.com as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the Cold Slither Podcast Network a payment that helps keep the Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through coldslitherpodcast.com. Do it today. All right, what books do we want to touch upon this week?
All right. Let's get the list up. Well, at least in Marvel this week, you know, we're wrapping up a lot of the current runs on books as we lead into Secret Wars. So, anyone want to pick one of those books? Or we just want to do Secret Wars. You just want to do Secret Wars.
Let's do Secret Wars first.
All right, let's do Secret Wars. Secret Wars number one, people.
It was very beautifully illustrated.
It was nice to see Esad Ribic back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was killing it on Thor, God of Thunder.
Yeah, it's nice to see his work back in the Marvel U.
So this is we actually see the incursion of the 616 and 1610 universe.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of heroes in this. As you'll notice, the Ultimate Universe, since they've killed a bunch of theirs, are very lacking in the heroes.
They're outnumbered, and I love how they admit that. It's just like, there's so many more of them.
But there are some heroes on the... I like how near the end of New Avengers, they just sort of like quickly introduced, hey, we know that there's no way we can stop these incursions, so we're going to create a raft or ark to save everyone. That just like came out of nowhere very quickly.
Yeah, and went nowhere.
And then I like how, of course, these spoilers for what we're going to talk about in here.
Well, you know, there's spoilers on this whole episode, but, you know. Mm-hmm.
I like how, I guess near the end of the issue, they, I guess, started like handpicking what heroes they wanted to save. Like you had Spider-Man and Star-Lord like, plucked away to their raft. So I'm wondering, I'm wondering if these versions of those characters are the ones that you know survive into Battle World, which is how you have like Peter Quill still the same, but then he's matched with the Age of Apocalypse, Kitty Pryde. So then, like, maybe, you know, Spider-Man will be married in the Renew Your Vows story, but then during the main Secret Wars series, there'll be our 616 Spider-Man running around doing stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of possibilities.
Yeah, that, and speaking on that part, I thought that was kind of strange because it seemed like at first, because they had they're basically, like you said, they built that raft, and they had a subset of people that they had picked to go on that trip.
Right.
And spoiler alert, those people don't make it. So and then that's when they started picking up these heroes. So I don't know, was that the plan of them picking up these heroes? Because well, they're like, okay, we gotta go. Get some of these people and let's go.
It seemed like they had the contingency plan in place in case there was a problem. And so
right.
They had Nightmask. There was Nightmask, right?
No.
Who was that?
Yeah, Manifold.
Manifold.
Yeah.
They had him plugged into the machine, and so as soon as the other ship with the people they wanted went down, then they used him.
Right.
Basically, go out there and grab, you know, whoever fits. We need one of these and one of these and one of these and one of these. And so I'm guessing it's going to be a mix of people from Marvel Universe and Ultimate Universe, and that's why both of those universes survive into this new warped reality. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The thing was, I felt the same way with the Secret Wars Zero, where if you have not been reading Avengers and New Avengers, mm-hmm. best of luck to you, but yeah. you're not going to be following the story.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, and speaking of, last week we already talked about New Avengers and Avengers, and I think Saturday was when I saw it. They saw, I think Hickman or somebody said, hey, read New Avengers first, then read Avengers. And
yeah. Yeah, that's the sequence you have
right
to
into this. Yeah.
So, I just don't know. I want to talk to somebody who has not been reading the Avengers books.
Hmm.
Who's more of a casual fan who sits down and reads this, because this is the big Marvel book that everyone's supposed to read. And I want to know how comfortable they are with the story and how much of it was just like, what the heck is happening?
I talked to a friend online yesterday, and he basically said the same thing. I had no idea what was going on.
Right, but at the same time, there's only so much you need to understand that coming out of this book, everything's ended. You know, the universe has ended, and we'll see what comes out of it in the next issue. So I don't think, beyond trying to figure that part out, I mean, all the stuff that we were just talking about out, you know, the finality of this, you know, this particular story is you know, makes things very simple to understand.
Well, I mean, unless you would just want to know, why is it ending, that kind of stuff.
Right, why is it ending? You want to know why. And, you know.
If you haven't been reading Avengers and New Avengers, and suddenly there's Doctor Doom, and he's sitting there, I am a god, and blah, 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 and you're like, what? Wait, what? You know, it just doesn't mean anything.
No, he doesn't say, I'm a god. He's saying, we ran into God.
Well, whatever.
Yeah,
and it's Doctor Doom. Why wouldn't he say that?
Exactly.
And then even if you have been reading it, you still won't understand what's going on.
Because it's Hickman Mumbo Jumbo!
Oh, man, I'm loving these variants. I love especially that the Scotty Hill one you had up earlier. But yeah, this was just basically a big bombastic fight, and things don't go well for both sides.
Yeah,
and
things go very poorly.
What's that?
Things go very poorly for everybody.
Yeah. I think probably one of the sleeper best parts of the issue was Kingpin sending an email to everybody to meet at this one spot. So they could just like, yeah, well, you know, I would have wanted this to be kind of different, but let's all drink this away. And then Punisher just comes knocking in.
That's pretty awesome. What am I going to do with all these bullets?
Yeah. which gave me a weird Scourge of the Underworld vibe for a second.
Yeah, just for a second.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
I don't know. We'll see where this... Where this goes out. Hopefully it lands properly.
Yeah,
it's going to be a long haul.
I agree. I think it's really going to start with the second issue. We will have a much better feel of how this event's going to play out once we get our hands on the second issue.
Yeah, they said the second issue is what, I guess, really sets things up. So... Is that come out next week? Is it weekly, or how is it?
I'm not under the impression that it was supposed to be weekly, but okay. It is. Number two is coming out next week.
Awesome.
Actually, here, I'll tell you what. Give me a second, and I'll find out the release date of number three. Here.
I thought I saw said the 13th.
I know I remember reading, like, it's 8 parts, and it comes out pretty quickly up until, like, the weeks before San Diego Comic-Con, and then... They kind of like pull back a little bit. So that's all I know.
Oh, I hear thunder outside. Yay.
Oh.
All right. Secret Wars 3. Let's see here.
Oh, poor Squirrel Girl's outside of the party.
Is it going to be a Muppets TV show?
Wait, yes. What?
A Muppets Revival greenlit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They've been talking about that. Supposedly, maybe possibly like the Office type deal. I can't remember what the whole...
Okay. Is. Secret Wars 3 has an estimated ship date of June 3rd.
That's... Wow.
So
okay.
It's only like a 2-week wait.
Yeah. Secret Wars 4 is... June 17th.
Another 2-week wait.
So it looks like they were supposed to be doing them every other week or twice a month, whatever, and for some reason the first two issues got bumped back to back instead of having that space in between. So
nice to have them in the can, at least.
Back to back it.
Yeah. And quite coincidentally, that's where I read it.
That's funny.
In the can. All right.
Or on the can.
Well, that's what we want to talk. So that's what we want to get to tomorrow.
Let's go with Ant-Man number 5.
All right.
So this is the end of that whole arc, the whole beginning arc. You have a revived Darren Cross, who received a heart from Ant-Man's daughter, Cassie, who we still don't know why she came back to life, which I guess they're going to just gloss over, but we know when that happened. Mm-hmm. Either way, this is a pretty interesting book. Like, do you see him going up against Cross and trying to deal with the situation? There wasn't really anything like groundbreaking, and it was just him a fight and some pretty good banter in between.
Right, but what it does is kind of resolve where what it resolves to me is, you know, kind of setting up a nemesis for Ant-Man. One, right. Two, kind of takes care of, you know, where he's going to be working or where he's going to be living, because I think what they're trying to do is maybe remove him from this locale that they mm-hmm. relocated him to, which is it Miami or is it just Florida?
I believe it was Miami.
It is Miami, right? So they may not be, you know, he may not be in Miami for much longer, if any longer. Based on how this issue ends. So that may be a pretty rapid status quo change for this book. You know, post-Secret Wars, maybe that's where we'll find our hero in a different locale coming out of Secret Wars.
Yeah, but overall it was a good read. I'm looking forward to see where this book ends up going.
And it's interesting that, and on the last page or the letters page, it says, you know, next issue is the annual, which has him teaming up with Hank Pym, the original Ant-Man. And I think it had the release date of July, so it's apparently skipping June and then coming back with the annual.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. It's like it's only been 5 issues and it's got an annual, and I know other books have had, you know, double the amount of injuries that still doesn't have an annual yet, or may never get one. So, you remember a time where, hell, almost pretty much every book had an annual, you know, after, say, 12 or 13 books.
Right, I mean, I was about to say, it was like a, no pun intended, because this is what it was, an annual tradition where mm-hmm. these annuals came out at the same time.
Right.
You know, for every book, so.
Kind of missed that.
All right. Let's see here. But it's kind of cool that they're making them required reading, because let's jump right into Inhuman Annual number 1. Mm. I know that at least Tim read this. What about you, Roddy, and Dirt?
No.
So this was basically like the capper to the
storyline, right?
Yeah, the year-long or over a year-long story of Inhuman that Charles Soule and various artists have been telling. Mm-hmm. You see part of Lineage's master plan, even though we don't really find out all of it.
Right.
It pulls Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel, into the Inhuman fold.
Or deeper in, right.
Karnak is back. I like.
Yes, and we discover how and why. And I thought the explanation was pretty good, actually.
It was pretty cool. What else we had here? Inferno's niece or nephew was born. We get a little tease with that.
Exactly.
And I think that's about... they have a nice little speech at the end basically saying how, you know, you know, they may all be different, but the Inhumans or New Humans got to stick together.
Mm-hmm.
Very X-Men-ish speak.
You know what? just now that the first big arc has ended, and you know, knowing that this is likely going to be the end, the last story in a trade paperback, what is your impression of Inhumans, and how do you think they're going to play out going forward? I mean, how effective a title will this be going forward? That's pretty much my question, because we know there's supposed to be an analog and a sort of replacement for the X-Men. So, you know, what do you guys think? Are they off to a good start? Something to build on?
I mean, they obviously have big plans for them, and I don't know. I wonder how much the Inhumans and Attila and Razin will play into whatever their role will be post-Secret Wars. And I guess we got to first look at that in the Uncanny Inhumans recomp a portion of the all-new, all-different Avengers book. And it's kind of odd that they came off that Inhuman Zero book. And then
with the Black Bolt? With Black Bolt?
Uncanny Inhuman Zero. But then Uncanny Inhumans number one won't launch until after Secret Wars, I assume. So it'll be like 6+ months between Zero and the one issue.
It's a primer. It's a primer. But ultimately, you know, I like where Soul has taken the Inhumans. I know I've said this before. I like how he's developed these characters and made them into characters that we actually care about. You know, that we want to follow, you know, on a monthly basis. It's no small feat. You know, it is no small feat to develop these characters in this way. So, you know, I give him a lot of credit. Obviously, he's had some good art on this book. Stegman, you know, does a bang-up job on this issue. You know, I think he does the entire book, correct?
Stegman does, but he also inks the majority of it, except a couple pages inked by Jay Leiston. And right. You can't tell which pages those are, but not that big a difference.
Right. I mean, Leiston is a pretty good inker in his own right. So, you know, I've actually seen him ink, you know, live, like at a con. But, you know, ultimately, I think they've done a great job of establishing the Inhumans as a lead book for the Marvel Universe.
At least trying to.
I know. I think they've pretty much accomplished it. But you know, I can definitely understand some reservations. You know, kind of holding back. You know, a complete thumbs up on that.
Does this play into that Captain America special that came out this week? Or that's a separate thing?
That's a separate thing.
It's a separate thing, but it does have Inhuman stuff, you know.
That crossed over with
Spider-Man
and all new Captain America and Inhuman specials.
Right.
Three special books.
Right.
Which I enjoyed the Spider-Man one. I haven't read the other two yet.
Yeah, I was about to say, I won't speak too much on this one. It sounds like I'm the only one that read all new Captain America special number one this week. I'm not the biggest fan of Falcap. I like him as Falcon. Some of the things that what's the author's name? Loveness, I think his name is in this.
Jeff Loveness.
Yeah, Jeff Loveness. You know, I'm not so keen on the characterization he had of Falcap in this, but he really writes a good Spider-Man. The Spider-Man in this issue is, you know, is pretty spot on. He is the Spider-Man that you know and love, and you know, it's very well done. And he even writes a bit of Spidey's weakness for redheads. I'll leave it at that.
Who doesn't like a redhead?
You know, well, Peter Parker happens to like them a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so does Scott Summers, but that's another story, right? How about Dirt? What did you read this week?
Comic books.
I
read Punisher.
Yes.
I didn't write anything down, but I read Punisher. Boy, this really ends the series.
Yes. I mean, obviously, there's a cliffhanger here. And I don't know if we want to completely spoil it, but I'll read it just in case.
I mean, he's coming back for the last days of the Punisher, which ties into Secret Wars.
Right.
Which is technically issues, I think, 19 and 20 of the series. But they finally wrapped up the story.
The LA story.
That started in the very first issue. So he finally finishes his takedown of the Mexican cartel.
The Del Sol.
And he makes an enemy of someone who should have been an ally.
Or who was at least an ally at one point.
Yeah, someone who should have been someone he could count on has now turned against him.
Did that seem sudden to you? Had there been any build-up to that in the previous issues?
I didn't really feel like there was.
Right, it didn't seem like there was, and that kind of took me by surprise. I guess obviously that's what Edmondson was looking for.
Right.
But I did not sense that that was building at any point in the last few issues. You know, obviously, you know, the character that we were talking about went through a lot of hell when the Del Sols were basically trying to burn L.A. down to the ground. But, you know, I was kind of taken aback at what happened, you know, between these two characters. So,
I mean, once it was explained, it made sense.
And sure.
I could understand where it was coming from. So it wasn't completely without merit, but it was
right.
Surprising. And it leaves the book at a point where if they had ended the series with this issue, it would have been a great ending.
Yes.
So I enjoyed the book. It was a candidate for Click of the Week for me. So
I was about to say, no spoiler alert here. This is mine. I definitely enjoyed this book immensely. It was that surprise that really took me by surprise. And, you know, that twist really caught me off guard. And I give Edmondson a whole lot of credit for pulling that off in just a few pages. You know, Gerard's art is always quality on this. I know he had some help finishing this off. But otherwise, you know, it was still very consistent. I liked...
Well, I was just going to say that the last couple issues I've had a little bit of a problem with the artwork, and it felt rushed in certain times. And this one, I didn't feel like this one was rushed. Mm-hmm. So I almost felt like they knew that this one had to be the top notch finish off their storyline. It had to be good. So I almost kind of wonder if they burned through a couple of those other issues to get to this one, and then this one is the masterpiece that they sat down and focused on.
Possibly. I definitely can see that. My favorite scene in this, and I give Gerard's a lot of credit for the layout. You know, Dirt, you know, as the other member of the show who's seen this can probably attest to, there's a scene where our point of view is pretty much looking through cell phones.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful page. Beautiful, beautiful page.
Yeah, a lot of work went into that one.
Yeah. You know, lots of computer-generated stuff, but still, beautiful page.
And a lot of that still takes time.
Sure.
I mean, the fact that he's doing it on technology, so he's using technology to, you know, help get it across, and it's not like he's just sitting there going to the computer and pulling up clip art off of Google image search and throwing it onto
right.
a page. I mean,
there's a
lot of time and effort going into it.
Right, but I love the layout of that page. I love how it's composed. Just so well done.
So that was a good book.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that actually, those are the only two Marvel books I think I read this week.
All right. Did you read Convergence Titans?
No, not Titans.
Okay. Well, I'll just very quickly. I like Titans. I really could have done without reading this. I'm not 100% sure what I was supposed to get out of this. I don't know what I'm supposed to get out of Convergence, so that's that.
Okay. The main Convergence book, again, it's fine. I think it's a story that's well told for what it is. The problem is it's not what they sold us on, and it's just the continuing saga of Earth 2, and I don't really care about Earth 2. I mean, this was them fighting in Warlords territory from the old Mike Grell series.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing that, you got Brainiac makes his appearance inside a T-sphere of all things, and then gets blown away, sent back. Telos, whatever his name is, seems to be coming around to the fact that he's been doing the wrong thing by making all these people fight each other. But then Demios is able to take control, and he now appears to be the one in charge of this planet that everyone's going to have to fight against him. The funny thing is, I noticed that with this week's books of all the Convergence tie-ins, they all end before Demios makes this announcement to everybody. So I'm wondering if they're going to play in some of the later weeks, or if all of these series are just going to wrap up basically being in the first half of Convergence and not have anything to do with the end of it. So, anyway. Again,
interesting. I'm flipping through this now, and I'm getting to the point that you're talking about.
So for what it is, for being Earth 2 and continuing their story, it's a well-done telling of that story. It's just not what we thought it was going to be, and because it focuses pretty much just on them, I'm just having a hard time, you know, getting into it and sticking with it.
Right, I was about to say, it's having a hard time holding your attention, really.
Yeah. As far as the crossovers go, let's see. The Batgirl one was okay. It ends up not really being anything special. It's just more or less nice to see that particular era of characters return, and that's really all it's there for. It's just that nostalgia trip. The Justice League one is pretty much forgettable.
Oh, yeah.
It's not offensively bad, but I don't know that I would ever want to read the story again. It exists, and that's all you can really say about it.
Mm-hmm.
The Batman and Robin, honestly, Dennis Cowan did the artwork, and anytime he does a book, I'm going to pay attention to it, regardless of anything else that happens. So I enjoyed it quite a bit because of that, but this is the version of Damian that nobody liked. They turned him into a likable character. So
okay.
They tried to kind of soften him up a little bit in this one, but, you know, still in the end, it turns out being another one of these Convergence books that doesn't matter. The one book that really stood out to me as being the one gem this week is the Superman tie-in.
Okay.
This Convergence Superman story is, for me, an encapsulation of everything that you want from a classic Superman story. And the fact that they're dealing with the Flashpoint universe, versus the earlier version of Superman and Lois Lane, and the way they deal with the characters and the differences between the two universes and how circumstances can change, you know, the overall look and feel of who the characters are. The characters are still consistent throughout the different universes. And this was just kind of one of those, if they put these two issues together in like some sort of deluxe bound $7.99, you know, cardstock cover thing, I'd probably go ahead and buy it just to have a better collector's version of the story, because this is the classic Superman fish out of water, trying to save Lois, becoming friends with this Batman from another universe, just everything that's the classic Superman-Batman friendship, all of that came together in one. And, you know, me being just a big nerd for DC Comics and loving Superman and Batman and everything, this to me was just, like, the greatest. So,
doesn't it help that Dan Jurgens did the story and the art?
Yes.
You know, like a real classic late 80s, 90s DC artist that captures that look.
Yeah, because I grew up with John Byrne, and then Dan Jurgens basically took over from John Byrne. He really became the brains behind it. So I just love the fact that he was able to do that. And yeah, to me, having the artwork from that time period telling the story also helps quite a bit to put you in the right frame of mind. But yeah, I love this book. I love everything about this. This is a Convergence book I would go back and read again. You know, in a year or so, I'd probably sit down and just read the issues back to back again.
What I was going to say is it seems to deal less with, you know, the battle,
right,
between the two, you know, the warring cities. I mean, I know it's there, but from me flipping through it, it seems to deal more with, you know, what would have happened if, you know,
the first
one character and another character were able to, you know.
Yeah, you know, the first half of the book
is
that the battle is going on, and then about halfway through the book, he just says, screw this is stupid, and he basically just runs out on the battle. And so after that, it goes back to the character piece. So that's really the only one this week that really stood out to me, and it stood out to me very, very strongly.
All right.
But that's pretty much it for the DC books this week.
Gotcha. All right.
Although we did have all those secret sneak peeks, whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we want to quickly go into the sneak peeks we read? Yeah,
let's do that.
Go for it. I didn't read anything.
Get the clips of the week. I read The Midnighter, The Omega Men, Green Arrow, and I opened the prez, but never actually read the first page of it. Just because of time. Green Arrow was interesting because it seems like they're going like a supernatural type bent to him, as far as like maybe some of the antagonists he deals with.
Patrick, to me, it seemed really confusing.
Yeah.
I really had a hard time following the story. Like, even though, you know, they were trying to tell a story kind of outside of continuity, just giving you, like, this preview of the character and the things that he's going to have to deal with. It got about 5 pages into it, or 6 pages into it, and suddenly it just starts jumping around to a bunch of different, like, they just ran out of time, and they were like, oh, okay, we'll just throw this stuff in the last 4 pages, and it just didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
Problem is, Green Arrow has gone through so many, like, mini reboots in the New 52, at least, because they fumbled them coming out
they fumbled
them coming out the gate, so then they, you know, Lemire and Sorrentino's run is like the classic kick-ass great art they did, and then one of the guys from the TV show came on, did their thing. Now another group's coming on to do their thing, and you know, trying to, of course, as creators, you want to make your run distinct from everyone else's. But it's like, it seems like it's the never-ending cycle of starting over at page one again.
Yeah,
sure. With all of our core. But at least they kept some stuff from the previous arcs, like his sister Amiko. Her name is something along those lines, is still here from Lemire and Sorrentino, I think, introduced her.
Yeah.
Omega Man was kind of interesting just because I have no idea who they're supposed to be or who they used to be in pre-New 52. And I like the art, that artist who I'm not sure who it is, so excuse me. But it deals with, I guess, the apparent death of Kyle Rayner, who I don't believe is actually dead, but
there was no refrigerator this time.
Oh!
I can't even take credit for that dumb joke.
I've noticed the creative team behind Omega Man is trying to do the social media push. They've been tweeting out, the end is here with the image, I guess, maybe from the first issue. And I don't know, it's like I said, I listened to a podcast with Tom King, who is one of the co-writers of Grayson. He seems super enthused about it, which has piqued my interest in it. And the art looks good. And
I thought it was interesting. I was really... You know, when I was flipping through the pages, like, I was really reading it, and then when it came to the end, I was like, oh, man, it's over already.
Yeah.
I really wanted more of
this. And it's funny, they packed a lot into those 8 pages, because the other eight-page previews from the other comics kind of went by quickly, but this one, it felt like, I almost felt like I read a full comic. And let's see. But yeah, so, I was going to ask Dirt, are you familiar with the Omega Men?
I read the old series that they had in the 90s. I think it was the 90s, maybe the late 80s. But it's one of those where it's been long enough that I couldn't really tell you anything about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I read a couple of them. I read, what was it, Detective Number 1, to which I had heard about the Batman change, So I was kind of curious if that's how, even though I haven't read how that came down.
That was revealed in the free comic book day.
Right, okay. Okay, well, I hadn't read that yet. But I don't know. It seems kind of compelling. This seems more along the lines of GCPD in a little ways, but a little grittier, because what was going on in this little sneak peek had kind of caught my interest.
Mm-hmm.
And for some strange reason, that Batman armor reminds me of a Pat Labor, or Pat Labor, whatever it is. That's an old anime, if anybody's familiar.
Come on, we've said it before. It reminds us of the Tick. Spoon!
There is that also. But I would be, after I get caught up on, you know, the in-game stuff, I would would actually almost be interested in checking this out and see where it goes, you know? And the other one I read was Red Hood and Arsenal, which just seems like a kind of a, not buddy cop, but a kind of a buddy superhero thing.
Just answer me this. Is the art good in it?
The art's not bad in it. Yeah. Okay. I didn't dislike it.
It's funny because, you know, there are these new post-New 52 books that I'm going to, you know, check out for the story and whatnot, but there's a good chunk of them just as far as art-wise go. I'm like, yeah, I'll flip through it for the art, and yeah. I was wondering if this was going to be one of them.
The art slightly reminds me of Invincible, but not, you know, strictly.
Yeah, actually, I can very much see that, especially with Cobra.
Mm-hmm.
It's his appearance on there. He definitely looks like an Invincible bad guy.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not a you know, Lobdell's hit or miss, but yeah, the art will pull me in for now.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of funny. Like the story is just them, I don't know if they were in the throes of it already, but them kind of going undercover and going up against Cobra, not to be confused with the G.I. Joe.
Right.
Cobra!
Which in my notes I said, yeah, it's two G.I. bros going up against Cobra, or not G.I. bros or whatever. So they seem to have a, you know, I'm not the biggest Red Hood fan, nor was I of Jason as Robin anyway, so it didn't really matter, but this one, I was like, okay, I'd read this. He's kind of an intriguing character on the outset of it, you know, and them two together, with both of them have had issues in the past, I'd be kind of curious to see what they end up doing.
All right. Are we in rapid fire now?
Yep.
That or clicks of the week.
Just a couple quick rapid fires. Amazing Spider-Man 18 wraps up the story of corporate sabotage at Parker Industries. It's a two-part story. It actually wraps up what had been going on in Amazing for a little while, which was a primary and a backup story. The backup story involved Black Cat and her new direction as the potential new kingpin of crime in New York. I felt like this issue did a great job of wrapping up the two stories, because they literally bled right into one another. I like that part. I'm not the biggest fan of the change in Black Cat, but it's making more sense as I keep reading it and seeing it as like a natural progression for the character, especially given how, you know, given the impetus and the catalyst that caused the change in her character. So, you know, I'm willing to wait to see what Slott has to do with this. I don't know if Slott's been announced as the new writer for as the continuing writer for Amazing Spidey or not. Once Secret Wars ends, I'm not sure. I know that he's supposed to be writing the whatchamacallit, the Married Peter and Mary Jane. That's supposed to be the continuation. Right, exactly. The Renew Your Vows books. But I'm not sure what's going to happen post. Obviously, we don't. None of us know. But I'm kind of curious to see how this plays out going forward. Let's see what else real quick. Hulk number 16 ends on a weird note. They do a good job of wrapping things up, kind of putting the toys back how they found them. But again, I'm kind of curious to see what they pick up when they restart post-Secret Wars. We still have kind of the old status quo, which is there's two Hulks in the Marvel U. Spoiler alert. We're basically back to She-Hulk and Hulk, and that's, you know, that's the status quo that we end this series with. Spider-Gwen number 4, yeah. kind of a weird issue. It's weird trying to figure out how things are different in this particular universe, but it's interesting to see the slightly altered portrayals of Aunt May and Ben Parker, mm-hmm. Who are actually still alive in this, who is actually still alive in this book, and it's kind of interesting to see how his character's portrayed in this alternate universe.
Right. So basically, Peter Parker's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt May and Uncle Ben are still alive. Gwen's kind of guilty because she thinks she's, you know.
Well, she's accused of being complicit, the one who killed him. Exactly. Right. Be the reason behind Peter Parker's death.
You know. I've been enjoying this book. I've actually been. It's been kind of. Well, this issue in particular has been kind of touching because she's been pretty much avoiding a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Most of which kind of gets ironed out or starts to get ironed out in this issue.
Yeah, it was a lot of talking things out.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
It was a lot. No, I was just going to say there was a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's what, you know, it took me some time to kind of absorb that because there had been some, you know, lots of high-flying action in the first three issues. Mm-hmm. And, we kind of see Gwen kind of brought down and knocked down, and we're waiting to see her kind of pick things back up again.
Right.
And, this issue, like you said, was a great issue to, you know, to kind of explore what she had been avoiding. You know, the character, you know, some of the points of the character and the motivation of the character that we've been kind of missing out on for the first three issues, plus the her debut issue. We got a little bit of it, but I guess that's what this issue served to do. It was kind of what we were talking about before. It was the farm scene in Avengers: Age of Ultron.
Yeah, or any classic Spider-Man where he's at his low point and needs kind of something to kind of put him back in perspective. Well, this is hers.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Kind of coming to terms with what's going on around her and her trying to get herself back together.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. Any other rapid fires? I think I hit pretty much everything I read.
Spider-Woman number 7, since it's kind of an insect-heavy week for me. So we see Jessica on the trail of trying to figure out who's been kidnapping the loved ones of C-list villains and making them, blackmailing C-list villains by kidnapping their loved ones. What ends up happening is she starts to track down the big bad of this arc, who is someone that I have never heard of before.
These are C-list villains? The guys on the cover? That's like D and E and F?
Well, none of them show up in the book, so I mean, no kidding. But Porcupine is in here, so.
Oh, Porcupine.
Yeah.
Wait, so is Pastepot Pete or Stilt Man anywhere in the book?
No, those Neither are not. See, no, those are not F list villains.
I was about to say those are B. Maybe. Yeah, D, sure. Yeah. In the case of Stilt Man, but so what ends up happening is she ends up finding a town full of these self-same C and D list villains, exes, and significant others. Like the whole town full of women so far and of people who have been involved with other C-list D-list villains. And then at the end, she meets up with the big bad she's going to end up fighting. And the last page of the panel, which kind of tells the tale of how that fight starts. But overall, this is kind of interesting. You know, it's a different change for Jessica. And I don't know where his book is going to go, if it goes anywhere, but this has been a pretty decent read.
Very quickly, how is the new costume worn on you? I mean, not that you're wearing it.
But yeah.
How has it been reading this book with the new costume in it?
I've made my peace with it. I mean, in this issue, you don't really see it. Because at first, it's like, okay, this is like just some like this could have been like some street, like some motorcycle get up, which, you know, most of the time we've seen it during the course of this, the issues you've seen are like on a motorcycle up until like last issue or whatever. So this could have been some motorcycle suit with a helmet or something. Oh, if she had put a helmet on it, it's
right.
It's not great, but it, you know, you make your peace with it. You can, it's kind of indistinguishable. If you saw her out in street clothes, it was like, okay, that's a weird outfit. Keep it moving.
Gotcha.
Which she changes, which she doesn't really see it much here because she's undercover in this issue. But you kind of see a couple of pieces of it. So all right. It really hasn't been made a big deal of.
And gotcha. Quickly, I'll just say. It was right up there for a possible click of the week, but Ganon, The Last Padawan number 2 was a very fun issue, beautifully drawn by Pepe Larraz, filling in some of the gap between, I guess, pre-Rebels, Star Wars Rebels show.
Right. This is a few years. This is probably, what, 15? Well, this is pretty
it's
much
15 when, years. Since
well, the no, Rebels
started.
Right, Rebels is 15 years 15. After the flashback stuff is right after Order 66 was given at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Right. All right.
So okay. This is pretty much what that is. As a matter of fact, we'll go ahead and click of the week, and we'll go into that.
Who wants to go first?
I go ahead and say Kanan the Last Padawan for mine.
Nice. Okay. I've already spilled mine.
Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, I was about to say, I've already spilled mine. Mine is Punisher number 18 for the reasons set forth above.
Mine is Descender number 3.
Something you haven't talked about yet.
Well, I'm going to talk about it now.
All right.
Quick in a week.
Awesome.
So basically, it's amazing what they've been able to do, make me... be sympathetic to a child robot named after me, Tim 21.
Oh, it's after you, of course.
But like, he got shot last issue. I won't go all into the backstory of the setup of the story and the world of Descender. But last issue ended with him getting a hole shot in his chest, and now like he's dying. And he like goes to like the robot afterlife and sees all the other robots that were destroyed by their masters. He's luckily saved by his creator, actually. And then he's telling the doctor how, he met all the other deceased robots and, in a dream. And the doctor's like, robots don't dream. And so Tim's like, if it wasn't a dream, what was it? So, dun dun dun. And the watercolor art style by Dustin Nguyen is phenomenal. Loving this series.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the one thing that always catches my eye when I flip through this. I'm actually buying this in physical form just for the art. I really haven't read it yet.
I need to do that, too. Oh, and I will say, big ups to put in a recap page at the beginning of the book.
It's a good thing.
Especially like the independent books, it's hard for me to keep up with what happened a month ago, and sometimes it's like longer than a month depending on when some of the stuff comes out. So the nice refresher helps a lot.
Cool.
And I am going to go with Convergence Superman number 2.
Nice. Because
I just love the classic throwback to the character, and it was just a beautiful story and very well done and just made me happy, and I need that. So there we go.
That's pretty cool. I'm glad one of these Convergence titles actually pleased you and made you happy, because it's been rough trying to flip through these.
Yeah, a lot of them, it's that same crossover. Every time you have a big crossover, there's going to be a whole bunch of Marvel Battle World and Last Day stuff I'm not going to give a crap about either.
Yep.
Every time they do a big crossover, you just run into a bunch of the stuff that's just there to fill up the shelves at the store, and there you go.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All righty.
Take it home. I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight's information-filled episode. And we even touch upon all the news, but you can go and find your own news throughout the week on your various sites.
And I did Roddycats link the show page, so you have a nice list of links.
I did, and there might be touched on sometime this weekend.
There you go.
There's that too. Plenty of ways to keep up with all the news that we keep up with. Make sure to follow us on our individual websites. Well, yeah, websites, because network.com and theclicknation.com. But also follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. Roddycat is at Roddycat and at News Nerds Need. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Tune in next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for another exciting episode of the Comic Book Chronicles. And we are signing off.